Extinct. There is not one Jaghut left with this kind of power. We would have found the threat. We would have destroyed it.
Sister Reverence staggered back from the precipice as she felt the spire sway under her. Hearts pounding, hips aching, she stumbled across the platform. Reaching her previous position, she glared down at the battle, in time to see the Vagath soldiers pouring up the embankment.
Rise! Khaleesi! My blessed children, rise to meet them!
Fists clenched, she flung her humans into the Kachane Chimal. Buffeted to one side by a collapsing Vagath, Gessler struggled for balance as his mount stumbled. He could see that the front line had plunged into the trench, and from higher up the tiers, hundreds of Khaleesi were rushing down to support their besieged comrades. He saw Stormy dragging his axe upward, a cloven helm jammed on the blade. The man's face was red as his beard, a berserk rage upon him. His Vagath stood atop the berm, its own weapons hammering down at the Khaleesi swarming up to assail it.
Fool's gonna get himself killed. He'll do it too, just to spite me.
He commanded his Vagath forward. Amidst the swirling flavors in his mind, he spoke to his Kachane Chimal.
Take this trench! Push! All of you, push!
Off to his right, he saw the Tlanimas chopping their way through the defenders, overrunning the redoubts. Once they were able to close in hand-to-hand fighting, their battle turned into slaughter. Gessler saw Onos Tulan, enemy weapons rebounding from him, wade forward, flint swords swinging. He seemed to be walking through a mist of blood.
Bastards are showing us up. Of course, we're all flesh and blood, and they're not. Nothing's more irritating than an unfair advantage on the field. At least they're on our side. Gods, why am I even complaining? Push!
The Vagath advance stalled in the trench. The sheer mass of armored bodies had blocked the huge reptilian warriors. Their weapons tore through the Khaleesi, but more of the enemy kept arriving. Ascending the berm, Gessler could see that the next tier of earthworks had been abandoned, all the forces pouring down to slam into the Kachane Chimal. Yet beyond those entrenchments, the remaining infantry stayed in their positions. He could see high redoubts on enfilading angles, onagers loaded and waiting.
This is going to take all day. Worse yet, we might even lose.
The Tlanimas had taken the trench at the center and were now seeking to broaden the breach. A salvo of heavy bolts slashed through their ranks.
Kill hunters! Sag Churok! We need you at the center. We need those onagers destroyed. The Tlanimas can break this wide open. Flow in behind them. The Vagath rear ranks, form up on the center and advance into the breach.
An arrow skidded off his left shoulder. Swearing, he kicked his Vagath forward, down into the trench to join Stormy. The slaughter was appalling, close and packed with heaving bodies, slashing and stabbing weapons. His Vagath landed on corpses. Already the trench was at but half its normal depth, and the smeared limbs and torsos slipped beneath his mount's weight until its claws dug in for purchase. A half-dozen shield-locked Khaleesi held the top of the ramp directly opposite, short-handled spiked axes at the ready. They were attacking the Vagath low, chopping at legs and thrusting at underbellies.
This is how the Malazans did it. Why couldn't these Khaleesi be stupid?
Howling, he drove his Vagath forward.
We kill and we kill still more, and yet they do not break. Destriant, these soldiers are under a Gath. A pure-blood Fokral Asael commands their souls.
Kalith slowly nodded. She could see that well enough. No army could withstand this kind of ceaseless slaughter. She knew that thousands of Khaleesi had fallen. The battle for the first trenches had consumed almost half the morning. And now, as the sun blazed directly overhead, in the very midst of the Jade Strangers, the Kachane Chimal and Tlanimas had advanced no further than crushing the last defenders of the third entrenchment.
Only halfway through the defences.
Beside her, the matron Gunth Mac spoke in a melange of flavours.
My Vagath are beginning to tire, Destriant.
A thousand have fallen and will not rise again. And now Gurul informs me that more Kalansi are on the way, upon the inland high road to the west. Kaleth hugged herself. What to do? What to say?
Then the Lethari and Balkando have failed.
No, they pursue, but they are much reduced and exhausted. They will not arrive in time to assist us. Destriant, it is difficult to reach the shield anvil and the mortal sword. They are in battle frenzy. Again and again they call upon a name I do not know, but each time it is voiced, something trembles in the air, a flavor pungent and bestial. Destriant, we must withdraw an element of our forces to meet this threat from the west. You must reach through to our human commanders. You must break their fury and speak with a voice of reason. Ride the minds of the Vegath. They will guide you to them. Kaleth drew a deep breath and then closed her eyes. The tattoos on Gessler's forearms were burning, as if splashed with acid, but he barely noticed as he leaned over the shoulders of his reeling Vegath. He had never been so tired, so demoralized. The enemy would not break. The enemy fought with a rage to match his and Stormy's, and though they died and died, still more came. An axe spike had plunged deep into his mount's gut, and the animal was dying beneath him, yet somehow it remained on its feet, somehow it continued advancing, weapons bashing foes aside. They had drawn closer to the center, to where the Tlanimas still pushed forward, their tireless arms rising and descending. Never before had Gessler been so close to the ancient undead warriors in the midst of battle, witness to this devastating implacability.
And the Emperor had almost 20,000 of them at his command. He could have conquered the world. He could have delivered such slaughter as to break every kingdom, every empire in his path. But he barely used them at all. Kellanved, is it possible? Did even you quail at the carnage these creatures promised? Did you see for yourself how victory could destroy you, destroy the entire Malazan Empire? Gods below, I think you did. You took command of the Tlanimas to keep them off the field of battle, to keep them out of human wars. And now I see why.
He still held his heavy sword, but had no strength left to even so much as lift it. The battle lust was fading. Something was assaulting it, tearing it down, away from his eyes, and all at once the redness of his vision fragmented, vanished, and he heard Kaleth's voice.
Gessler, there is another Kalansi army on the high inland road. They are fast marching. We must guard our flank.
Guard our flank? With what?
He angled his mount round, lurched as it staggered.
Ah, shit. My Vegath's finished.
He pulled his boots from the scale stirrups, slid down from the beast's slathered back. Landing, his knees buckled and he fell to one side. Fighting to regain his breath, he stared up at the strange and strangely crowded sky.
All right. Listen, Kaleth. Draw the Kel back and send them over there. All of them. Tell Sag Churok I'm sending him the Tlanimas.
He forced himself to his feet.
Did you hear all that?
He flinched as his Vegath fell over, legs flailing, half its guts hanging out in thick ropes. He saw the life empty from its eyes.
Yes, Gorol says you must hurry. There is little time.
That damned Rizan's finally come back, has it?
Gorol says there is a storm coming, Gessler. He says you called it.
Like hood I have.
He looked around, but Stormy was nowhere to be seen.
A storm? What's she going on about? Whatever it is, it's probably that red-bearded bastard's fault.
Cursing, the mortal sword set off to find Onos Tulan. His forearms, he saw with faint alarm, were sweating beads of blood. Onos Tulan cut diagonally in a downward chop through the torso of the Kalansi opposite him, dragging his blade free as he stepped over the crumpling body. An axe head slammed into his ribs on his left side, bounced off, and he turned and slashed through his attacker's neck, watched the head roll off the shoulders. Two more strides and he was atop the fourth berm, his warriors coming up alongside him. Looking down into the trench, he stared at a mass of upturned faces, all twisted with inhuman hatred, and weapons lifted as he prepared to descend into the press.
First sword!
Onos Tulan paused, stepped back and turned round. The Malazan named Gessler was stumbling towards him.
Gessler, said Onos Tulan, there are but two more tiers left, and the number of enemy in those positions is sorely diminished. We shall prevail. Draw your Vegath into our wake. First sword, we are about to be flanked to the west. I have sent what remains of my kill hunters there, but they are not enough.
Onos Tulan lowered his sword.
I understand. We will push on here without you, Gessler said. You've split the defenses in two, and when all is said and done, the Vegath can outclimb and outrun humans. We will fight to the foot of the stairs. We will assault the spire. Akrust Corvalane is wounded now, mortal sword. Telan is awake. Olarethil is near. It seems that this shall be a day of ancient powers. Malazan, beware the voice of the pure who awaits you atop the spire.
The man revealed red-stained teeth.
Once I get up there, she won't have time to get a single damned word out. I wish you success, mortal sword. Tell the Kachin Chemal we are honored to have fought at their side this day.
Onos Tulan reached out to his followers, and as one they fell to dust. Sister Reverence could hear the grinding ascent of the ice against the spire off to her left, while before her she saw the Kachin Chemal carve their way ever closer to the base of the stairs. The Tlanimas had vanished, but she knew where they were going.
And high-watered Festian will have to face them. He will have to find a way to encircle them, to win past and strike the Kachin Chemal.
Then she looked skyward, where enormous dark clouds were building almost directly overhead, forming huge, towering columns bruised blue and green. She saw flashes of lightning flaring from their depths, and the blinding light was slow to fade. Two remained, burning luridly, and instead of diminishing, it seemed that those actinic glares were growing stronger, deepening in hue. All at once, she realized what she was seeing.
There is a god among us. A god has been summoned.
The eyes blazed with demonic fire, and the clouds, ever massing, found form, a shape so vast, so overwhelming, that Sister Reverence cried out. The argent gleam of tusks, the clouds curling into swirls of dark fur. Towering, seething, building into a thing of muscle and terrible rage, the eyes baleful as twin desert suns. Dominating the entire sky above the spire, Fenrir, the boar of summer, manifested.
This is no sending. He is here. The god Fenrir is here.
With dawn paling the grey sky overhead and water running in streams along the gutters, Carsa Orlong looked down at the peaceful face of the old man cradled in his lap. He slipped a hand under that head and lifted it slightly, and then moved away, settling it once more on the hard cobbles of the street. It was time. He rose, taking hold of his sword. Fixing his eyes on the temple opposite, he walked towards the barred door. The city was awakening. Early risers out on the street paused upon seeing him crossing their path, and those who could see his face backed away. He reached for the heavy brass latch, grasped hold of it, and tore it away from the wooden door. Then he kicked, shattering the door's planks like kindling, the sound of the impact like thunder, its echoes tumbling down the passageway within. Voices shouted. Carsa entered the temple of Fenrir. Down a once opulent corridor, past the flanking braziers, two priests appearing with the intent of blocking his passage, but when they saw him, they shrank from his path. Into the altar chamber, thick smoke sweetly redolent with incense, a heat rising from the very stones underfoot, and to either side the paint of the murals was crackling, bubbling, and then it began to blacken, curling away from the walls, devouring the images. Priests were wailing in terror and grief, but the Toblachai ignored them all. His eyes were on the altar, a block of rough-hewn stone on which rested a jewel-studded boar tusk. Closing on the altar, Khaser raised his stone sword.
Upon his heart.
When the blade descended, it smashed through the tusk and then continued on, cracking the altar stone with the sound of thunder, shattering the block in half. Onos Tulan could hear weeping, but this was the sound of something unseen, something long hidden in the souls of the Tulani Mas. He had never expected it to awaken, had never expected to feel it again. In his mind, he saw a child, clothed in mortal flesh, lifting a face to the heavens, and that face was his own, so long ago now. There had been dreams, but even as they faded, the child boy wept with shuddering convulsions.
Things die. Dreams fall to dust. Innocence bleeds out to soak the ground. Love settles in cold ashes. We had so much, but we surrendered it all. It was unforgivable.
He rose again on a broad, level stretch of land where a village had once stood. It had been made mostly of wood, and that wood had been taken away to build engines of war. Now only the foundation stones remained. The raised road that ran into it sloped until it was level with the cobbled street at the village's edge. His kin rose around him, and they moved out to present a broad front facing onto that road, there to await the army they could now see to the west. The sound of thousands of marching boots on cobbles was a solid roar underfoot.
We shall fight here, because the fighting and the killing goes on forever, and the child will shed his tears until the end of time. I remember so many loves, so many things lost. I remember being broken again and again. There need be no end to it. There is no law to say that one cannot break one more time.
When he raised his weapon, his kin followed suit. 7,459 Tulani Mas.
Another battle. The same war. The war we never lost, yet never knew how to win.
The concussion that clove through the heaving clouds behind them staggered the Tulani Mas. A thunder so loud it shivered through their bones. Wheeling round, Onos Tulan stared up to see a stone sword, an Imas sword, descending as if held in the hand of the jade strangers, impossibly huge, slicing down through a vague bestial shape, that then staggered. Twin embers of crimson, eyes, suddenly blossomed as if filling with blood. A roar sounded, filling the air with such fury and pain that it pounded the entire army of Tulani Mas back a step, and then another.
The death cry of a god.
And the heavens erupted. Onos Tulan watched the waves of blood descending, falling earthward. He watched the crimson sheets rolling across the land, watched them roll ever closer. And then, with yet another roar, the rain slammed down upon the Tulani Mas, driving them to their knees. Head bowed beneath the deluge, Onos Tulan gasped, one breath, another, and his eyes, fixed now upon the hands on his knees, slowly widened. As the withered skin softened, thickened, as muscles expanded, another terrible gasp of breath deep into aching lungs. From his kin, sudden cries of shock, of wonder.
We are remade. By the blood of a slain god, we are reborn.
Then he lifted his gaze to look upon the Kalansi ranks, fast closing on their position.
This was ill-timed.
The blood of a slain god rained from the sky, in torrents cascading down from the ruptured, now shapeless clouds. The air filled with the terrible roar of those thick drops, falling heavy as molten lead. The armies fighting near the highest level of the isthmus were staggered by the downpour. The vast shelf of ice, ever rising towards the pinnacle of the spire, now streamed crimson in growing torrents. Bowed beneath the onslaught, Sister Reverence staggered towards the altar stone. Through the carmine haze she could see the crippled god's heart, no longer a withered, knotted thing of stone, now pulsing, now surging with life. But the sorcerous chains still held it bound to the altar.
This changes nothing. My soldiers shall hold. I still have their souls in my hands. I have the chains of their fallen comrades, their slain souls, all feeding my power. At the foot of the stairs they shall make a human wall, and I will take this unexpected power and make of it a gift. I will feed this blood into the soul of Akrast Korvalain.
She drew up against the altar stone, slowly straightened, and held her face to the sky, to feel that hot blood streaming down. And then, laughing, she opened her mouth.
Make me young again! Banish this bent body! Make all that is outside as beautiful as that which was ever inside! Make me whole and make me perfect! The blood of a god! See me drink deep!
It was as if the heavens had been struck a mortal wound. Callus cried out in shock, in dread horror, as the deluge descended upon the land, to all sides, devouring every vista as if swallowing up the entire world. The blood on her face, on her hands, felt like fire but did not burn. She saw the heavy drops pounding into the lifeless earth, saw the soil blacken, watched as streams of thick mud slumped down the hillsides. She could barely draw breath.
Gunsmack, what will come of this?
Nestriant, I cannot give answer. Immortal rituals unravel. Ancient power melts, dissolves. But what do these things mean? What is resolved? No one can say. A god has died, Destriant, and that death tastes bitter, and it fills me with sorrow.
Callith saw how the Kachain Jemal, momentarily stunned, now resumed their assault upon the highest defences of the Kalansi. She saw the defenders rise to meet the Vegas.
A god dies, and the fighting simply goes on, and we add to the rain with blood of our own. I am seeing the history of the world here before me. I am seeing it all, age upon age, all so useless.
There was low laughter behind her, cutting through the dull roar, and Callus turned. Sin had stripped naked, and now she was painted in blood.
The pure has made a shining fist, she said, to block the ascent. The lizards cannot break it. Their oils are fouled with exhaustion.
Her eyes lifted to Callus.
Tell them to disengage. Order them to retreat.
She walked past. The Imas reeled back. The Kalansi heavy infantry pushed forward over Imas corpses. With shields and armor, they weathered blows from stone weapons. With iron sword, axe, and spear, they tore apart unprotected flesh. And on all sides the rain of blood, cooled now, lifeless, hammered down. Driven past the remains of the village, the Imas forces contracted, unable to hold the enemy back. Pincers swept out to either side, seeking to encircle the increasingly crowded, disorganized warriors. Onos Tulan sought to hold the center in the front line. He alone remembered what it was to defend his own body, now so vulnerable, so frail. His kin had forgotten. They attacked unmindful of protecting themselves, and so they died. Reborn, only to live but moments. The anguish of this threatened to tear the first sword apart. But he was only one man, as mortal as his brothers and sisters now, and it was only a matter of time before. He saw the Kalansi line opposite him flinch back suddenly, saw them hesitate, and Onos Tulan did not understand. Low, deep laughter sounded from somewhere on his right, and even as he turned, a voice spoke.
Imas, we greet you.
Now, pushing through to stand in the foremost line,
Jaggert.
Armored, helmed, bristling with weapons, all of it dripping blood. The Jaghut beside Onos Tulan then said in a loud voice,
Suvalas, are you as beautiful as I remembered?
A female shouted in answer,
You only remember what I told you, Hort, and it was all lies.
Amid Jaghut laughter, the one named Hort tilted his head to regard Onos Tulan.
To draw breath was unexpected. We thought to fight with you, two lifeless but eternally stubborn peoples. A day of slaughter! Ha!
The Jaghut beyond Hort then said,
And slaughter it shall be. Alas, the wrong way round. And there are but 14 of us. Aimanan, you are good with numbers. Does 14 dead Jaghut constitute a slaughter?
With 5,000 Imas, I would think so, Gedoran.
Then our disappointment is averted, and I am once more at ease.
The Jaghut drew weapons. Beside Onos Tulan, Hort said,
Join us, first sword. If we must die, must it be on the back step? I think not.
His eyes flashed from the shadows of his helm.
First sword, do you see? Fokral Asel, Kachain Chemal, Imas, and now Jaghut. What a fell party this is!
Gedoran grunted and said,
All we now need are a few Thel Akai, Hort, and we can swap old lies all night long.
And then, with bull roars, the Jaghut charged the Colansi. Onos Tulan leapt forward to join them, and behind him, the Imas followed. Gilimada, who had been chosen to lead because she was the most beautiful, looked back on the way they'd come. She could barely make out the Barghast.
They are slow.
If only you were taller, Gilly.
Bellowed her brother, Gand.
You could look the other way and see the fighting.
Scowling, Gilimada faced forward again.
I was about to, impatient runt, Gand. Everyone, enough resting. We shall run some more. Do you all see?
Of course we do,
shouted one of her brother's mouthy friends.
We're all taller than you, Gilly.
But who's the most beautiful? Exactly.
Gilly, there are Jaghut with those Imas.
Gilimada squinted, but the truth of it was, she was the shortest one here.
Are they killing each other?
No.
Good. All the old stories are lies.
Surely just that one, Gilly?
No. If one is a lie, then all of them are. I have spoken. Is everyone rested? Good. Let us join the fight, just like in the old story about the war against death itself.
But it's a lie, Gilly. You just said so.
Well, maybe I was the one doing the lying. Did you think of that? Now, no more wasting of breath. Let us run and fight.
Gilly, I think it's raining blood over there.
I don't care. You all have to do what I say, because I'm still the most beautiful, aren't I?
With the remaining Kell hunters cut and slashed, many with the snapped stubs of arrow shafts protruding from their bodies, Sag-Churok advanced at a cantering pace. Before them, he could see the Imas, granted the bitter gift of mortality, locked in fierce battle against overwhelming numbers of Colansi heavy infantry. Among them, near the front, there were armored Jaghut. To see these two ancient foes now standing side by side sent strange flavors surging through the Kell hunter, scouring away his exhaustion. He felt the sense flowing out now to embrace his kin, felt a reawakening of their strength.
What is this that so stirs my heart? It is glory. We rush to our deaths. We rush to fight beside ancient foes. We rush like the past itself into the face of the present. And what is at stake? Why, nothing but the future itself. Beloved kin, if this day must rain blood, let us add to it. If this day must know death, let us take its throat in our jaws. We are alive, and there is no greater power in all the world. Brothers, raise your swords!
Reaching level ground, the Kachane Chemal Kel hunters stretched out their bodies, swords lifting high, and charged. 278 Teblor smashed into the flank of the Kalansi forces near the line of engagement. Suddenly singing ancient songs, mostly about unexpected trysts and unwelcome births, they thundered into the press, weapons swinging. Kalansi bodies spun through the air. Entire ranks were driven to the ground, trampled underfoot. Wild, terrible laughter rose from the Jaghut upon seeing their arrival. Each of the 14 led knots of Imas, and the Jaghut themselves were islands amidst slaughter. None could stand before them. Yet they were but 14, and the Imas fighting close to them continued to fall, no matter how savagely they fought. The Kel hunters struck the inside envelopment, driving the enemy back in a maelstrom of savagery. They swarmed out across the pasture and over the paddocks to swing round and plunge into the Kalansi flank, almost opposite the Teblor. And in answer to all of this, high-watered Festian ordered his reserves into the battle. 4 legions, almost 8,000 heavy infantry, heaved forward to close on the enemy. Bitter Spring, crippled by a sword thrust through her left thigh, lay among the heaps of fallen kin. There had been a charge, it had swept over her, but now she saw how it had stalled and was once more yielding ground step by step. There were no memories to match this moment, this time so short, so sweet, when she had tasted breath once again, when she had felt the softness of her skin, had known the feel of tears in her own eyes, how that blurred her vision, a thing she had forgotten. If this was how living had been, if this was the reality of mortality, she could not imagine that anyone, no matter how despairing, would ever willingly surrender it.
And yet?
The blood still raining down, thinner now, cooler on her skin, offered no further gifts. She could feel her own blood, much warmer, pooling under her thigh and around her hip, and the life so fresh, so new, was slowly draining away. Was this better than an inexorable advance into the enemy forces? Better than killing hundreds and then thousands when they could do little to defend themselves against her and her immortal kind? Was this not, in fact, a redressing of the balance? She would not grieve, no matter how short-lived this gift.
I have known it again. And so few are that fortunate. So few.
The ship of death lay trapped on its side, embraced in ice. Captain Shurk Elal picked herself up, brushing the snow from her clothes. Beside her, Skorgan Kaban, the pretty, was still on his knees, gathering up a handful of icy snow and then sucking on it.
"Bad for your teeth, pretty," Shurk Elal said.
When the man grinned up at her, she sighed.
"Apologies, forgot you had so few left."
Princess Falash came round from the other side of the ship's prow, trailed by her handmaid.
"I have found him," she announced through a gust of smoke. "He is indeed walking this chilly road, and it is safe to surmise, from careful gauging of the direction of his tracks, that he intends to walk all the way to that spire, into that most unnatural rain."
Shurk Elal squinted across what had been, only a short time ago, a bay. The awakening of Omtos Felak had been like a fist to the side of the head, and only the captain had remained conscious through the unleashing of power that followed. She alone had witnessed the freezing of the seas, even as she struggled to ensure that none of her crew or guests slid over the side as the ship ran aground and started tilting hard to port. And alone among them all, she had seen Hood setting out on foot. A short time later, a storm had broken over the spire, releasing a torrential downpour of rain that seemed to glisten red as blood as it fell over the headland. Shurkelal regarded Falash.
Princess, any sense of the fate of your mother? Too much confusion, alas, in the ether. It seems, she added, pausing to draw on her pipe and turning to face inland, that we too shall have to trek across this wretched ice field, and hope that it does not begin breaking up too soon, now that Omtos Phalax sleeps once more.
Scorgon scowled.
Excuse me, sleeps? Captain, she's saying it's going to melt?
Pretty, said Shurkelal. It is already. Very well, then. Shall we make haste?
But the princess lifted a plump hand.
At first I considered following in Hood's footsteps, but that appears to entail a steep and no doubt treacherous ascent. Therefore, might I suggest an alternative, that we strike due west from here?
I don't know, said Shurkelal. Shall we spend half a day discussing this? Falash frowned.
And what precisely did I say to invite such sarcasm? Captain?
My apologies, Highness. This has been a rather fraught journey.
It is hardly done, my dear, and we can scarcely afford the luxury of complaining now, can we?
Shurkelal turned to Scorgon.
Get everything ready. There truly is no time to waste.
The first mate turned away and then glanced back at Shurk.
If that's the case, then why in Mael's name is she...
That will be enough, pretty.
Aye, Captain. Sorry, Captain. On my way, aye.
Queen Abrastol, I will deliver your daughter into your keeping. With every blessing I can muster, take her, I beg you, before I close my hands round that soft, delicious neck and squeeze until her brains spurt from every hole in her head. And then her handmaid will have to chop me into tiny pieces, and Scorgon will do something stupid and get his head sliced in half, and won't that be a scar worth bragging about?
She could just make out Hood's trail towards the spire, and caught herself looking at it longingly. Don't be a fool, woman. Some destinies are better just hearing about over ales in a tavern. Go well on your way, Hood, and the next face you see, well, why not just bite it off? He had passed through the gates of death, and this rain, in its brief moments of magic, could do nothing for ghosts. No kiss of rebirth, and no blinding veil to spare from me what I now see. Tok sat on his lifeless horse, and from a hillside long vanished, worn down to nothing but a gentle mound by centuries of ploughing, he watched in horror the murder of his most cherished dreams.
It was not supposed to happen this way. We could smell the blood, yes, we knew it was coming. But Onos Tulan, none of this was your war. None of this battle belonged to you.
He could see his old friend there at the center of less than 1,000 imas. The 14 Jaghut had been separated from kin and now fought in isolation, and archers had come forward and those Jaghut warriors were studded with arrows, yet still they fought on. The Kel hunters had been driven back, pushed away from the imas, and Tok could see the Toblakai, barely 50 of them left, forced back to the very edge of the slope. There were Barghast on that far side now, but they were few and had arrived staggering, half dead with exhaustion. Tok found that he was holding his scimitar in his hand.
But my power is gone. I gave the last of it away. What holds me here, if not some curse that I be made to witness my failure? Onos Tulan, friend. Brother, I will not await you at the gates. My shame is too great.
He drew up his reins.
I will not see you die. I am sorry. I am a coward. But I will not see you die.
It was time to leave, He swung his mount round and stopped. On the high ridge before him was an army mounted on lifeless war horses.
Bridge burners.
Seeing Whiskey Jack at the center, Tok kicked his mount into a canter, and the beast tackled the hillside, hoofs carving the broken ground.
Will you just watch this?
He cried as his horse scrabbled up onto the ridge. He drove his charger towards Whiskey Jack, reined in at the last moment. The old soldier's empty eyes were seemingly fixed on the scene below, as if he had not heard Tok's words.
I beg you,
pleaded Tok, frantic, the anguish and frustration moments from tearing him apart.
I know I am not a bridge burner.
I know that.
But as a fellow Malazan, please, Whiskey Jack, don't let him die.
The lifeless face swung round. The empty eyes regarded him. Tok could feel himself collapsing inside. He opened his mouth to speak one more time, to plead with all he had left. Whiskey Jack spoke in a tone of faint surprise.
Tok Younger, did you truly imagine that we would say no?
And he raised one gauntleted hand, the two soldiers of his own squad drawing up around him, Mallet on his left, Trots on his right. When he threw that hand forward, the massed army of bridge burners surged onto the hillside, lunged like an avalanche, sweeping past Tok, driving his own horse round, shoving it forward. And one last time, the bridge burners advanced to do battle. The thunderous concussion of the god's death had driven Torrent's horse down to the ground, throwing the young warrior from the saddle. As he lay stunned, he heard the thumping of the animal's hoofs as it scrambled back upright and then fled northward, away from the maelstrom. And then the rain slammed down, and out over the rising ice beyond the headland he could hear shattering detonations as the ice fields buckled. Whirling storms of snow and sleet lifted from the cliffside, spun crimson twisters, and the ground beneath him shifted, slumped seaward.
All madness! The world is not like this!
Torrent struggled to his feet, looked across to where the children huddled together in terror. He staggered towards them.
Listen to me! Run inland, do you hear me? Inland and away from here!
Frozen blood slashed down from the sky. Behind him, the wind brought close the sound of laughter from Olar Ethil. Glancing back, he saw that she was facing the spire. Absey suddenly wailed. Story cried,
Don't leave us, Torrent! You promised!
I will catch you up!
Torrent!
Just run!
Taking up Absey in her thin arms, Stavi plucked at her sister's filthy tunic. And then they were on their way, vanishing in moments as the red sleet intensified, flinging curtains down that rolled deeper inland, one after another. Turning to the east, Torrent stared in astonishment. The entire edge of the headland now sloped steeply towards the bay, but ice was rising beyond that edge, now level with the top of the cliff. Off to his right, the spire was engulfed in the downpour. Hearing the witch's laughter again, he looked across to where Olar Ethil stood. But the ancient hag was no more. A young woman stood in the deluge.
Reborn! She shrieked. My kin, all reborn! I shall lead them! We shall rise again!
She spun to face Torrent, blood like paint on her bold features, and then her head darted like a bird's.
Where are they? Where are the children? My gifts to him. And I will give him more, more children. We shall rule together, the Bonecaster and the First Sword. Where are they?
Torrent stared at her, and then, slipping treacherously on the icy ground, he collected up his bow and quiver.
They slid, he said. They panicked, went down the slope, down onto the ice. I couldn't reach them.
You fool!
When she ran towards the ice field, Torrent followed. The frozen blood lacerated his face as the wind howled up from the bay. One forearm held up to shield his eyes, he stumbled after Olar Ethil.
You will give him more? Is that what all this was about? You love him?
You took his life and made him a thing of skin and bones. You stole his children away, maybe even killed his wife, their mother. You did all this thinking you could win his heart? But he had seen her, enough of her, anyway. Reborn, made young, she was not displeasing to the eye. Solid, full-breasted and wide-hipped, her hair, before the blood soaked it, so blonde it was almost white, her eyes the colour of a winter sky. No longer undead. So too then, Onos Tulan? Now reborn? She took everything away from him, and would now replace it with herself, with the world she would make. Tok Anasta, did you know this? Did you understand her reasons for all that she has done? Does it matter? He reached the ice. She was still ahead, fleet as a hare as she danced her way down the broken, jagged slope. He thought he could hear her crying out for the children. Fissures were opening up as the field's own weight began to crush the ice, and the descent was growing ever steeper. Off to his right, he could see one part of it still climbing, as if it would reach to the very summit of the spire itself. Was there a speck there, halfway up that ramp of ice? Someone ascending? He could not be sure. His feet went out from under him, and he slid, rebounding from spars of rock-hard ice. In a blur, he was past Olara Thiel, hearing her shout of surprise. His head struck something, spinning him round, and then his feet jammed against a hard edge that suddenly gave way. He was thrown forward, the upper half of his body pitching hard, as what felt like jaws closed on the lower half, snapping shut on his hips and legs. He heard and felt both thigh bones snap. Torrance screamed. Trapped in a fissure, the edges now rising above his hips as he sank deeper. He could feel blood streaming down, could feel it freezing. He had lost grip on his bow and the hide quiver. They lay just beyond his reach. Olar Ithil was suddenly there, standing almost above him.
"I heard bones break. Is it true? Is it true, pup?"
She reached down and took a handful of hair, twisting his torn face around.
"Is it? Are you useless to me now?"
"No, listen. I thought I heard them. The children. Absi, I thought I heard him crying."
"Where? Point. You can still do that. Where?"
"Pull me out, witch, and I'll show you."
"Can you walk?"
"Of course I can, woman. I'm simply jammed in this crack. Pull me out. We can find them. But quickly, this entire field is shattering."
She cackled.
"Omtos Felak in all its glory. Yet who dares face it? A bonecaster, that is who. I will destroy it. Even now I am destroying it. That fool thinks he will take that wretched heart. I will defy him. He deserves no less. He is Jaghut."
"Pull me free, witch."
She reached down. Her strength was immense, and he could feel frozen blood splitting. Could feel massive sections of skin and flesh torn away as she lifted and dragged him out from the fissure.
"Liar! You lied!"
Torrent lay on his back. The red sleet was diminishing now. He could see the jade strangers and the sun itself. From below his hips, he could feel nothing. "Frozen, bloodless. I haven't got long."
"Where are they?"
He forced himself onto one elbow, pointed off to the right and slightly downslope.
"There, behind that rise. Stand atop it, witch, and you may see them."
"That is all I need from you. Now you can die, pup. Did I not say you would?"
"You did, Olar Ithil."
Laughing, she set off for the rise of hard-packed snow and ice, 25, maybe 30 paces away. Torrent twisted round, dragged himself closer to his bow.
"I promised," he whispered.
Half-numb fingers closed about the bow's shaft. He scrabbled one-handed for the quiver, drew out a stone-tipped arrow. Rolling onto his back, he lay gasping for a moment. It was getting hard, hard to do anything. Ice squealed and then cracked, and he slid half a pace, back towards that fissure, but now it was wider. Now it could take all of him. Torrent forced the nock's slitted mouth round the gut-string. She was almost there, tackling the ragged side of the rise. He used his elbows and shoulders to push himself up against a heap of rubbled ice, brought the bow round and drew the arrow back. This is impossible. I'm lying all wrong. She's too far away. Wretched panic gripped him. He struggled to calm his breath, deafened by the pounding of his own heart. Olar Athil scrambled onto the rise, straightened and stared downslope. He saw her fists clench, half heard her howl of fury. Squinting, his muscles starting to tremble, he stared at her shoulders, waiting, waiting, and when he saw them pivot, he released.
I will make him pay for the lies!
Olar Athil, eldest among all the bonecasters and now reborn, spun round towards Torrent. The arrow caught her in the left eye. The stone tip tore through the eyeball, punched through the back of the socket, where the bone was thin as skin, and the spinning, chipped stone point drilled a gory tunnel through her brain, before shattering against the inside of the back of her skull. He saw her head snap back, saw the shaft protruding from her face, and by the way her body fell, collapsing like a sack of bones, he knew that she was dead, killed instantly. Gasping, he sagged back.
Did you see that, Tok? Did you see that shot? Oh, gods, it's done, brother. It's done. I am Torrent, last warrior of the All.
When he slid towards the fissure, he was helpless to resist.
Torrent, last warrior of the...
Stormy bellowed in agony as Gessler dragged him away. The red-haired Falari had been stabbed through his right thigh, but the blood was slow, gushing only when the muscles moved, telling Gessler that the fool wouldn't bleed out before he got him away. The Vergath were all drawing back and back.
Because she's coming. Because she's finally joining this fight. Gods help us all.
Pulling Stormy onto the blood-soaked embankment of the third trench, he looked back upslope. She was walking alone towards the massed Colansi. Little more than a child, stick-thin, looking undernourished, pathetic. When Gessler saw her raise her hands, he flinched. With a terrible roar, a wall of fire engulfed the highest trench. Scalding winds erupted in savage gusts, rolling back down the slope. Gessler saw the corpses nearest the girl, crisp black, limbs suddenly pulling, curling inward in the heat's bitter womb. And then Sin began walking, and as she did so, she marched the wall of fire ahead of her. Kallith stumbled to her knees beside Gessler.
You must call her back! She can't just burn them all alive!
Gessler sagged back.
It's too late, Kallith. There's no stopping her now.
Kallith screamed, a raw breaking sound, her hands up at her face, but even she could not tear her eyes from the scene. The fire devoured the army crouched against the base of the spire. Bodies simply exploded, blood boiling. Thousands of soldiers burst into flames, their flesh melting. Everything within the fire blackened, began crumbling away. And still the firestorm raged. Gunth Mac was crouched down over Stormy, oil streaming from her clawed hands and sealing the wound on his leg, but he was already pushing those hands away.
Gessler, we got to reach those stairs.
I know, he said. Through fire. Well, of course it has to be us.
She won't stop,
Stormy said, pushing himself to his feet, swaying like a drunk.
She'll take it for herself, all that power.
I know, Stormy, I know, damn you!
Gessler forced himself to his feet. He squinted inland.
Gods below, what is that?
A ghost army, Kallith said. The matron says they simply came down from the sky.
Send the Vergath that way, all of them, Kallith. Do you understand? You need to get them as far away from this as possible. If Sin reaches the heart, that fire's likely to consume the whole fucking land for leagues around.
She pulled at him.
Then you can do nothing. Don't you see? You can't.
Gessler took her face in his hands and kissed her hard on the lips.
teach these lizards, Kalith. Only the best in us humans. Only the best.
He turned to Stormy.
All right, let's go. Forget any weapons. They'll get too hot in our hands. We can tear off this armor on the way. Stop ordering me around.
Side by side, the two old marines set out. They climbed across greasy bodies, over ground that steamed, and through air hot as the breath of a smithy's forge.
Can't believe you, Geth, gasped Stormy. You called on Fenner. I wasn't the only one, Stormy. I heard you.
Not me. Must have been someone else. You called him, and someone fucking killed him. Gessler, you went and killed our god.
Go to Hood. Gessler growled. Who crossed his finger bones when he swore off that cult? Wasn't that you? I think it was.
You told me you did the same.
Right, so let's just forget it. We both killed Fenner, all right?
Five more strides, and there could be no more words. Every breath scalded, and the leathers they now wore as their only clothing had begun to blacken.
Now it's going to get bad. But this is Tellus. I can feel it. We've been through this before.
He looked for Sin, but could not see her anywhere.
Walked out of the flames at Yagatan. Walked into them here. It's her world in there. It always was. But we knew that, didn't we? I swear I can hear her laughing.
The two men pushed forward. Kallis cried out when Gessler and Stormy vanished into the flames. She did not understand. She had looked on in disbelief as they had stepped over bodies reduced to black ash. She had seen their tunics catch fire.
Matron, what gift is this? What power do they possess?
Destriant, this surpasses me. But it is now clear to me, as it is to all of us, that you chose most wisely. If we could, we would follow these two humans into the firestorm itself. If we could, we would follow them to the edge of the very abyss. You ask what manner of men are these? Destriant, I was about to ask this very same question of you.
She shook her head, shrugged helplessly.
I don't know. Malazans.
The flames drove him back. And this was a source of fury and anguish. He tried again and again, but his beloved master was beyond his reach. Howling, he raced back and forth along the third berm, the foul stench of his own burnt hair acrid in his nostrils. And then he saw the pup, the one of tangled hair and piercing voice, the pup that never grew up, running towards the cold, towards the frozen sea. Had the pup found a way round this burning air? The Wiccan cattle dog with the scarred face tore off in pursuit. There would be a way round. He would find his master again, to fight at his side. There was, for Bent, no other reason to exist. The base around the spire had been reduced to scorched bedrock. Not a scrap of armor remained, nothing but molten streaks of iron tracking the slopes of the blackened stone. Yet Gessler and Stormy walked through the conflagration. Their leathers had melted onto their bodies, hard and brittle as eggshells, and as the two marines pushed closer to the stairs, the clothing's remnants cracked, made crazed patterns like a snake's shedding skin. Gessler could see the stairs, but she wasn't there. His gaze tracked upward.
Shit.
She was already a quarter of the way up. He punched at Stormy's shoulder and pointed. They reached the base, set foot on the baked, crumbling stone. Stormy edged into Gessler's path and began gesturing, the hand language of the Marines. Leave her to me. I'll slow her up. Hold her back, whatever. You go past. You go fast as you can. Get to the top. Listen, this was almost too much, even for us. She'll cook you down to bones. Never mind that, I'll hold her back. Just don't fuck up there, Guess. Throw the hag off the edge, get that damned heart. Gessler's legs ached with every step. He was too tired for this. A whole day of fighting. the strain of command, the seemingly endless slaughter. By the time he reached the top, assuming they even got past Sin, he'd have nothing left, weaponless, face to face with a damned Fokrul Asael. Sin had not looked back down, not once. She had no idea she was being pursued. Her steps were measured, relentless but slow, almost casual. They had all climbed above the flames, which had at last begun dying below them. The girl would hold it back now, saving it for the Fokrul Asael. Tell us to wage war against the Asael's warren.
Old, old shit, all of this. Can't they all just go away? Back into their forgotten graves? It's not right, us having to fight in wars we didn't even start. Wars that have been going on for so long, they don't mean a thing anymore. You took a foreign god's wounded heart. I see the blood on your lips. It's not right. It just isn't. Adjunct, I know you ain't dead. Well, no, I don't. But I refuse to believe you failed. I don't think there's a thing in this world that can stop you. We'll do our part. You'll know that much. You'll know it. Make this right. Make it all right.
Stormy was one step up from Gessler. He saw his friend reaching out, saw his hand close about Sin's ankle. And then, visibly snarling, Stormy tore her from the stairs, swung her out into the air behind him, and let go. Gessler saw her plummet, saw her mouth open wide in shock, and then that visage darkened.
Now you got her mad, Stormy.
But he was reaching now for Gessler, grasping his arm and lifting him past.
Go, Gessler! Climb your sorry arse off!
A push that almost sent Gessler sprawling against the steps, but he recovered and pulled himself upward, leaving Stormy in his wake.
Don't look down. Don't look at him, Gessler. You know why. Don't!
Instead, he paused, twisted round, met his friend's eyes, their gazes locked. And then Stormy nodded and flashed a half-mad smile. Gessler made a rude gesture, and then, before his heart could shatter, he turned back to the stone steps and resumed his ascent. Hood pulled himself over a splintered ridge of ice and looked up once more. Not far now. The ice road was groaning, cracks spreading like lightning. He had felt the assault of Olar Athil, her hatred of Omtos Felak unleashing power that raked through him sharp as talons. And then it had vanished, and he knew that she was dead. But the damage had been done. There was the very real chance that he would not make it, that this spar of ice would shatter beneath him, sending him down to his death. Death. Now that was an interesting notion. One that, perhaps, he should have been more familiar with than any other being, but the truth was, he knew nothing about it at all. The Jaghut went to war against death. So many met that notion with disbelief or confusion. They could not understand. Who is the enemy?
The enemy is surrender.
Where is the battlefield?
In the heart of despair.
How is victory won?
It lies within reach. All you need do is choose to recognize it. Failing that, you can always cheat, which is what I did. How did I defeat death? By taking its throne.
And now the blood of a dying god had gifted him with mortal flesh, with a return to mortality. Unexpected, possibly unwelcome, potentially
fatal. But then, who has a choice in these matters? Ah, yes, I did.
A rumble of laughter from deep in his chest followed the thought. He resumed his climb. Ahead was a broad fissure cutting diagonally across his path. He would have to jump it. Dangerous and undignified, his moment of humor fell away. He could sense the nearby unleashing of Telas, could see how the air around the spire was grey with smoke, and the stench of burnt flesh swept over him on an errant gust of wind from inland.
This is not by the hand of an Imas. This is something new, foul with madness.
this could defeat us all. He reached the fissure, threw himself over its span. His chest struck the edge,